It's 9 o'clock on a Thursday night. It's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. 18 years ago, hard to believe, but it was 18 years ago on May 24th, 1990, that a pipe bomb planted under Judy Berry's car seat exploded and nearly killed her. And only hours later, she was charged with bombing herself along with a comrade in her car, Daryl Cherney. It was 11 years ago that Judy, after fighting the FBI, fighting for the forests and the workers, and putting together a constitutional rights lawsuit against the FBI and the Oakland cops, tragically died of cancer at her home. And it was 6 years ago that that lawsuit that she had worked so hard on finally came to federal court, and they won in a historic decision challenging COINTELPRO and the FBI's dirty tricks. It was a year later that the city of Oakland declared May 24th Judy Berry Day, and every year since 1990 we remember that warrior woman, remember to never give up the fight, and make sure that we never forget that day and understand what the state is capable of when it has no regard for people's rights or the Mother Earth. We also celebrate the phenomenal legal victory our amazing legal team won against the FBI in 2002. We have had rallies at the Oakland Federal Building. We have commemorated the day in many other cities, and we have held events at the site of the 1990 bomb explosion. This year, on Saturday, May 24th, just a couple of days from now, folks will gather at 11 a.m. at the intersection of Park Boulevard and 580 MacArthur Boulevard, Oakland, next to the Oakland High School. Shortly before noon, we will march the two blocks to the location where the bomb exploded at East 33rd and Park Boulevard for a moment of silence. But for the rest of time, we will not be silent. Bring music, your thoughts about Judy Berry, your words about the FBI's trampling of activists' rights. Please join us. Look for the colorful banner that says, "Don't ever give up." Once again, that's this coming Saturday, May 24th, at 11 a.m., gather intersection of Park Boulevard and 580 MacArthur Boulevard in Oakland, next to the Oakland High School, and march to the bomb site at East 33rd and Park for a moment of silence, and then everything will happen after that. For more information, call 510-548-3113. That's 510-548-3113. And let's remember Judy Berry and everything she did for the forests and the workers. Coming up July 17th through 20th, is the 15th Indigenous Environmental Network Protecting Mother Earth Conference. I know this is a ways off, but this is also a ways out in the wild, and you also need to register for this one, so I'm giving it to you early. The Protecting Mother Earth Conference, Answering Mother Earth's Call for Healing, Reaffirming Our Roots. Once again, this is taking place July 17th through the 20th at New Segobi, or the Western Shoshone Territories, at the Sohobe, which is South Fork Powwow Grounds in Lee, Nevada, which is just north, I believe, of Las Vegas. It's a traditional gathering camping style. Topics will include traditional land, air, water, and sun energies, global warming and climate change, rescinding the doctrine of discovery, and youth and elders. It is hosted by the Western Shoshone Defense Project and sponsored by the Indigenous Environmental Network. So for more information, contact the Indigenous Environmental Network, area code 218-751-4967. That phone number again, 218-751-4967. Or the Western Shoshone Defense Project at 775-468-0230. Once again, that number for the Western Shoshone Defense Project, 775-468-0230. That's another great thing. Also coming up this Saturday, the California Native Plant Society Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team will be having their native plant restoration at from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. This Saturday's Broom Bash will be our final project at the ranch before the heat of summer makes it difficult to pull and unbearably hot. Despite the heat, many unique and rare species of flora and fauna eke out an existence in the Sandhills habitat of Quail Hollow. Hope you've had an opportunity to visit this special place and enjoy its beauty. We'll return in early winter to start our next round of maintaining our broom sites and the enormous advances we have made in eradicating invasive non-native French broom. See you out there. To get there, take Graham Hill Road North from Santa Cruz. As you come down the hill into Felton, turn right on the first light in town called East Zianti. Drive up East Zianti Road about 2 miles and turn left on Quail Hollow Road. The park entrance is on the right side, about a half a mile up. Meet in the gravel parking lot on the left side of the entrance road. The Habitat Restoration Team is a volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. Our program provides an opportunity for people to learn about old parks and natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. We welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Wear comfortable layered clothing, bring something to drink, and lots of enthusiasm. And I think this Saturday you'll probably need some sunscreen. We work rain or shine. There'll be plenty of shine, but if things get particularly unpleasant, they'll call it a day. Tools are provided. Bring gloves and water. Program leader Linda for more information, 831-462-4041. That's 462-4041. Her email, redwoodrn, that's REDWDRN, at packbell.net. Or visit the local website, www.cruisecnps.org. And here's the Fern Gully tree sit update. They're in the home stretch, they say. The timber harvest plan in which the Fern Gully Tree Village resides is set to expire before the end of 2008, with approximately 5 months to go. As many of you know, Maxam Corporation filed bankruptcy on Pacific Lumber Company, and it looks like Maxam is going to let it go. So the new owners and fate of Pacific Lumber Company are hanging in the balance. If we can maintain our defenses and or if the new owners of Pacific Lumber Company agree to end harvesting old growth forests, then we may see another victory in freshwater. This victory would be shared by everyone, including future generations and all non-human species of life in the Fern Gully area. We sincerely hope for the safety of the trees and the tree sitters, and that the new owners of Pacific Lumber Company will be sensible enough to end this conflict for good by permanently protecting all old-growth trees and logging responsibly. For more information, go to ferngully.wesavetrees.org. And that's the whole place. There's no W's or dots or any of that stuff. It's ferngully.wesavetrees.org for their website. And the Nanning Creek update, home of the Spooner Tree. The timber harvest plan containing the Nanning Creek Spooner Tree Village is also set to expire this year as well, within a few weeks of the end of the marbled murrelet nesting season. Maxam Pacific Lumber cannot legally operate in this area during this time due to the federal and state restrictions on operating within endangered species habitat from March 25th to September 15th of each year. As with Fern Gully, the fate of the trees in Nanning Creek, including the very ancient and enormous Spooner Tree, has a lot to do with who takes over ownership of Pacific Lumber Company as the bankruptcy proceedings come to a close in Corpus Christi, Texas. Your support is needed to help keep this nonviolent resistance going until the timber harvest plan ends or permanent protection can be achieved. People are risking their lives every day and night to protect these trees, so please help out if possible. And their webpage is spoonerdirect.org. That's all one word. No triple W's, none of that horse folly. It's spoonerdirect.org. And tree sitters protest U.S. radar base in Czechoslovakia. Peace protesters have taken to the trees at a Czech military site where the U.S. military wants to put up controversial anti-missile radar. For the moment, the Czech authorities are turning a wary blind eye to the Greenpeace protesters at the Grady military base, who number between 10 and 20 at any one time, some in trees and some on the ground. Their presence since April 27th is a sensitive matter, however, as polls indicate two-thirds of Czechs oppose the missile shield that the United States wants to place in the country and neighboring Poland. The Czech Defense Ministry believes the Greenpeace members are not committing a crime but an offense and has opted to seek a non-conflict solution, spokesman Andrej Šurtek told AFP. I guess that's Armed Forces Press. The protesters are camped in a forest at what military maps describe as Hill 718, around 100 kilometers southwest of Prague. The United States wants the radar shielded Brady and interceptor sites in Poland as a guard against the threat of attack from what it calls rogue states such as Iran. Russia has strongly denounced the project, however, as a threat to its own security. At night, camp members sleep in tents or in the trees. During the day, they organize the site and seek to avoid Czech military police. They are not nasty. They come to check on us regularly, sometimes really early in the morning. They patrol the forest paths and stop anyone else from joining us, but allow people to leave, explained Lenka, a young Slovak who supervises the camp's tree dwellers. A man who gave his name as Tom Tom is one of the tree protesters. If the army comes to move these camped on the ground, I will be able to stay and continue the symbolic action, said Tom Tom, who said he was a 24-year-old law student from neighboring Austria. The protesters have erected a gigantic white banner bearing a black target on Hill 718. They have planted a totem pole for peace and constructed a log bridge, which serves as a symbolic meeting place. We are at a crucial crossroads. We have a choice whether to opt for an arms race or not, explained the leader of the protester, Jan Friedinger, who fires off emails to Czech politicians with a solar-powered portable computer plugged into Wi-Fi by a tree-mounted antenna. And Australian police arrest kangaroo cull protesters. In reporting by James Grubel and editing by Roger Crabb of the Reuters News Service. Police arrested eight protesters on Wednesday as they tried to stop a cull of hundreds of kangaroos on a military base near the Australian capital, and local Aborigines joined the campaign against the slaughter. Elders from the local indigenous Ngawalnawal clan said they were reclaiming the land from the Australian Defence Force, lighting a small ceremonial fire which they attempted to carry into the defense communications site. "We are claiming our land, and that's what our sacred fire means," Elder Isabel Coe shouted as police forced the protesters. Shouted at police as protesters forced their way to the site of the cull. Police arrested four men and four women who will face trespass charges. Authorities plan to kill about 400 of the 600 kangaroos on the military communications base. Animal rights activists say the cull is barbaric, but authorities say it is needed if all the kangaroos and other animals are not to starve due to overgrazing. Animal activists have written the former Beatle Sir Paul McCartney and his recently divorced wife Heather Mills, asking them to fund a $750,000 relocation of the animals, rejected by the government as too expensive. Up to 4 million wild kangaroos are culled each year in Australia, from a total population of 50 million, to control population and prevent overbreeding. And here's the Buffalo Field Campaign update from the field. Yesterday, we sent out a special alert to inform you that the Montana Department of Livestock had captured 9 bull bison at the Duck Creek Trap. Thanks to you all for making the calls to help these bulls. Unfortunately, the livestock interests got their way. In spite of our efforts in the early morning hours, the 9 wild bulls confined to the Duck Creek Trap were loaded onto 2 livestock trailers and shipped to slaughter by the Montana Department of Livestock. In the face of over 1,600 bison killed by government management actions alone this year, the lives of 9 bulls may not seem like much, but it is a lot. Every single buffalo life is significant. Each carries the future of the next generation. Each holds within itself the evolutionary potential of this magnificent prehistoric natural wonder. From our observations, we can tell you with confidence that the buffalo population is below the conservation threshold of 2,100 established in the Interagency Bison Mismanagement Plan. The agencies can confirm this if they want to do another aerial survey. As it is written in the plan, when the population falls below 2,100, the agencies will take action to prevent more slaughter of the buffalo by taking more non-lethal management actions. It just so happened that the late winter count on April 11th observed 1,970 buffalo, but the agency stuck that number into their population matrix and out popped 2,145 buffalo. That same report estimated 400 to 700 winter killed buffalo. The 330 wild buffalo that had been confined to the Stevens Creek Trap in Yellowstone's north boundary were released this week. Those buffalo have been through trauma as we cannot even begin to understand, chased off their native ground into a trap where hundreds of their relatives were stolen from them and sent to slaughter or domestication prisons. Wilderness confined equals madness. After being held for nearly 2 months, wranglers opened the gates of the trap and hazed the buffalo deeper into the park. Buffalo Field Campaign was there with the buffalo monitoring their condition. What we saw was not good. All the buffalo have numbered tags glued to their bodies. One female buffalo was reported to have a broken leg, and numerous buffalo have gore wounds. In natural conditions, buffalo rarely harm each other. When confined, their behavior obviously changes. It's a damn shameful thing to see the buffalo released from Stevens Creek Trap with numbered tags on their gored hides. They look like fruit marked for checkout at a grocery store. The interior summer ranges, the agencies claimed the buffalo and their newborn calves were being forced to from Horse Butte and the Upper Madison Valley, are under spring floods or late winter snows. There's very little green up inside Yellowstone from the Madison to Firehole to Old Faithful and from the Madison to Gibbon to Norris. Green up was just taking hold in the Lamar Valley from Mammoth to Blacktail Plateau. Once again, the agencies involved have ignored ecological conditions on the ground to enforce an arbitrary May 15th drop deadline. There's not one beef cow here on the west side of Yellowstone, and they will not be trucked in until early July or late June at the earliest. So how can they conflict with the buffalo? Well, I don't know either. Do you have an outgoing personality and knowledge of the issue with a willingness to communicate to Yellowstone visitors? Do you have construction, carpentry, plumbing, cleaning, or automotive maintenance skills? If you have any of the skills listed above or are willing to learn, then you should plan on joining us this summer. All volunteers will be provided with food and lodging at our main cabin site outside of West Yellowstone in one of the most beautiful areas of the country. If you have just a few weeks of the whole summer, Buffalo Field Campaign could use your help. If you are interested in helping with summer outreach projects inside of Yellowstone and Grand Teton National Parks, please contact IWI, that's IWI, and the email address is summer@buffalofieldcampaign.org. Once again, to volunteer for outreach projects this summer, email summer@buffalofieldcampaign.org. If you are interested in assisting with cabin maintenance projects this summer, please contact the Buffalo Field Campaign. Their address, Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. The phone number, which you should call before you go, area code 406-646-0070. Once again, that number, 406-646-0070. If you've forgotten any or all of the above, or just want further information about the Buffalo Field Campaign, visit their website, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And remember, the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the U.S. And sea lions died of overheating, not gunshots. In this story reported by Teresa Carson, editing by Daisuke Wakabayashi and Eric Walsh of the Reuters News Service. Six protected sea lions found dead in government traps this month died of overheating, not gunshots, as had originally been suspected, the National Marine Fisheries Service said. On Wednesday, investigators had suspected foul play in the deaths after finding sea lions covered in blood and puncture wounds inside a trap at a dam between Washington and Oregon. But a review found that the deaths were consistent with heat exhaustion. There was blood present, puncture wounds, and this is a very controversial program, so the initial hypothesis was that they were shot, said Brian Gorman, spokesman for the National Marine Fisheries Service. The death halted a controversial program that allowed Washington State and Oregon to trap and kill sea lions in an effort to stop the mammals from eating endangered salmon. The sea lions make the 150-mile trip from the Pacific Ocean up the Columbia River to the Bonneville Dam, where the salmon channel through the fish ladders to go upriver to spawn. The sea lions are now returning to the California coast to mate as spring salmon run ends. The Humane Society sued to stop the trapping and killing program, and officials agreed to halt the proposed killing 2 days after the 6 sea lions were found dead on May 4th. And the United Kingdom's only mountain-dwelling species of butterflies could be wiped out in Scotland because of climate change, experts have warned. Warmer temperatures are driving the mountain ringlet higher up hillsides in search for cooler conditions. The Butterfly Conservation Scotland, or BSC, has appealed to the public to report sightings as part of a Scottish Natural Heritage-funded project. People are also asked to look for northern dart and netted mountain moths. Paul Kirkland, the BCS director, said ringlet faced a very real threat. He said this butterfly is retreating higher up the hillsides as the warmer weather makes lower habitats unsuitable. The fear is that as climate change continues, this rare species will run out of mountain and become extinct in Scotland. The flip side of global warming has been seen species which have died out in the south surviving in Scotland. They include checkered skipper butterflies, Kentish glories, and New Forest burnet moths. Mr. Kirkland said there are already parts of Scotland harboring butterflies that have become extinct in England, and the largely unspoilt landscape found in the uplands is becoming an increasingly important habitat. It is essential we find out exactly what is hiding in the hills. There are 33 species of butterfly that regularly breed in Scotland, and about 1,300 species of moths. And a smoke and mirrors plan for spotted owl ignores science. In this story by the American Bird Conservancy, who can be found at website www.abcbirds.org. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service released a final northern spotted owl recovery plan on May 16th, which fails to incorporate the best available science concerning protection for the old growth and mature forests that the owl habitats. Under this plan, forest managers will have discretion to boost logging in areas essential to the recovery of the declining northern spotted owl, said Steve Holmer, spokesman for the American Bird Conservancy. The science is clear. All remaining old growth and mature habitat of the owl needs more protection, not less. To conserve the owl, the plan creates managed owl conservation areas, or MOCAs, on 6.4 million acres, which is significantly smaller than the existing system of reserves on 7.5 million acres created under the Northwest Forest Plan. While the MOCAs overlap with the reserves in many places, they provide 1.1 million acres less habitat protection and do not include forests on the east side of Cascade Crest. The agency may also be able to use the creation of MOCAs to justify the elimination of existing system reserves. The plan has already failed 4 independent science reviews because it severely downplayed the importance of protecting the owl's old-growth forest habitat. The most recent science review by the Sustainable Ecosystems Institute was made public less than a month ago. The other 3 reviews were conducted by the Society for Conservation Biology, the American Ornithologists Union, and the Wildlife Society. This plan threatens spotted owls, marbled murrelets, endangered salmon runs, and clean water supplies across the region, said Holmer. Science supports stronger habitat protection, not weakening the protective measures already in place under the Northwest Forest Plan. Congress needs to intervene and make sure another round of scientific peer review takes place before this flawed plan can be implemented. Independent science reviews all recommend maintaining current protections for the owl's old-growth forest home included in the Northwest Forest Plan, which created a system of reserves to conserve the owl and approximately 600 other old-growth dependent species. Northwest Forest Plan is proving effective at slowing the spotted owl's decline. The rate of decline for owl populations covered under the plan is about 2.4% per year, compared with a rate of 5.8% per year decline for study areas not covered by the plan. And that's it for the Earth First update for today. If you missed portions of this Earth First update or you want to hear previous Earth First updates, please go to http://h2opodcast.com, capital Earth First .html. That's capital E and capital F in the Earth First .html, and it makes a difference for some reason. Once again, that podcast address, h2opodcast.com/earthfirst.html, and the E and the F in Earth First are capitalized, and we thank the folks at H2O Podcast for recording and podcasting the Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock.